things that I always think is important is for us to try to get the big picture of things. I think sometimes we focus in upon details and we miss the big picture. If you get the big picture first, I think it then helps you to then be able to go back and put the details in. If you want to talk about Old Testament history and the books of the Old Testament, this is the time period where you begin. The time of the Exodus from Egypt. And as we talked about at the beginning of our quarter, I realized that we always want to say, oh, well, start with the beginning of creation. And, of course, that's where Genesis starts. But, of course, the book of Genesis was written right here. It was written after the Exodus from Egypt. And all the books of the Pentateuch were written then. And they were written for the nation of Israel that had come out of Egyptian bondage. And so it's important, I think, to view it in that way. All these books, the first five books of the Old Testament that were written by Moses after the Israelites had come out of Egyptian bondage and during this 40 years when they were wandering in the wilderness. So, does that bother y'all, that strobe effect? Okay. I don't know why it's doing that. Okay. Let me back up here. So after this 40 years of wilderness wandering, then you've got the period of the conquest of Canaan. Let's just kind of overview the entire Old Testament period. After the conquest of Canaan, that's when you've got this Judges era that probably lasted about 335 years or so. And finally, you've got the United Monarchy period, where the nation asks for and does receive a king. And so you've got the throne that starts out in the house of Saul, but ultimately winds up in the house of David. David, the first king of that dynasty of David. And so you've got what we call the United Monarchy period, where David is king, Solomon is king. During Solomon's reign, that's when God's permanent sanctuary, the temple, is built. As far as Old Testament history is concerned, what's the high point of Israel's history? Right here, okay? I mean, you know, as you survey this, you need to appreciate the fact that they're coming into the land. I mean, they're still struggling for possession of that land all during the Judges era. And even once the monarchy period starts with Saul, it still is not a time of peace, even during David's reign. That's why David is fighting all those wars, because he is solidifying the control of that promised land in the hands of Israel. But during Solomon's reign, that's this high point. And that's when, for that one brief shining moment, the nation of Israel was at its zenith in the Old Testament world. All right, then, of course, after Solomon's reign, then things start to fall apart. Again, because of disobedience to that covenant. And so the kingdom splits in two. And you've got 10 tribes that go to the north, and you've got the northern kingdom known as Israel, and then the southern kingdom known as Judah that's still in the hands of the Davidic dynasty. There are several dynasties that then ruled over the northern kingdom of Israel. By the way, does anyone recall offhand those four dynasties that ruled over Israel? What's the first dynasty, first king of the northern kingdom? Jeroboam, okay, his dynasty pretty short-lived. His son didn't last long. Who's the next, or what's the next dynasty? Anyone recall? Baasha, okay, insignificant dynasty, okay? So if you don't recall the Baasha dynasty, it's Baasha's own fault because he was unfaithful, didn't have much of a dynasty, so no wonder we don't recall him. What's the next dynasty? Not the dynasty of Jehu. Third dynasty of Israel. King Ahab was a member of that dynasty. His father's the head of it. Who's the father of King Ahab? Omri. Okay? So the Omri dynasty, Ahab, of course, is the most prominent king of the Omri dynasty. And then the fourth dynasty over Israel is the dynasty of Jehu. Okay. And then after that fourth dynasty, then the nation just, the northern kingdom just sort of collapses into a time of anarchy. Okay. And ultimately, they wind up going into Assyrian exile. And that's the end of the northern kingdom. That's it. 721 BC, that northern kingdom is over with. But the kingdom of Judah barely hangs on, and it continues, still ruled over by the Davidic kings. Are most of the Davidic kings faithful to Yahweh? I mean, yeah, you kind of, how do you want to define faithful, you know? But, yeah, you have a few. Who are the few kings of the southern kingdom of Judah that would stand out in your mind as really righteous kings? Asa was a fairly righteous king. Tried to do what was right. Who else? Hezekiah. I mean, you just really have to single out Hezekiah as one of the great kings of the divided monarchy period. And then there's one more that you really have to put up there as a really righteous king. Josiah. Right toward the end. And after Josiah dies, you remember he got killed in that battle at Megiddo when he went to cut off the forces of Pharaoh at Megiddo, and it really wasn't a very smart move because he gets killed in battle. And after Josiah dies, then the southern kingdom just goes downhill. You still have Davidic kings who are ruling over it, but it really is just a time of turbulence. And ultimately, then, they wind up in exile, 597 B.C. That's when Jerusalem is captured. And then 586 B.C., it's destroyed. And so you've got that time of Babylonian exile. So we're just kind of overviewing this Old Testament history. Then, after that 70 years, approximately 70 years of Babylonian exile, then you've got a small portion, a remnant of the people who come back to the promised land. And so we've got this period that we oftentimes call the restoration period, the time when the nation is restored. And that's a period of time that a lot of times we're not real familiar with. So who are the key names there? When they come back from Babylonian exile, who's the first major leader who's of the royal house of David? Zerubbabel. And what does Zerubbabel do that is very noteworthy? Rebuilds the temple. Rebuilds that sanctuary. And as part of the royal house of David, that's very fitting. Because as you recall, and we emphasize this, that God's promise to King David was his royal house had the right of rule, and therefore his royal house had the privilege and the responsibility of building Yahweh's house, Yahweh's temple, and keeping it up. And so now you've got Zerubbabel of the house of David, who then rebuilds that temple. Who would be the other two major leaders who led groups back to the promised land? All right, before Nehemiah, Ezra, and then finally Nehemiah leads the third group back. And so Old Testament history really comes to an end, say, by what year? What? Just to give a date, when would you mark the end of Old Testament history? 400 B.C. Okay. So basically, then, what we're talking about from the Exodus from Egypt, and by the way, what would be, and we're not certain about the dates going back that early, but normally, what date would you probably give for the Exodus from Egypt? Approximately 1445, you know, mid 15th century, right in there. So let's say 1445 BC. So Old Testament history, from about 1445 B.C. down to 400 B.C. Okay. All right, that's the period of time that we're wanting to have a better knowledge of. Okay? So that's the big picture as far as Old Testament history. Now what we want to do is go back And let's put it all these Old Testament books in their proper place. Dwayne? Sure. This you're asking about this intertestamental period. You're asking, are there some intertestamental books that would be available that you could read and learn about the historical events during that period of time? Absolutely. In fact, I can get you some. Not that they're part of inspired scripture, but that intertestamental period is covered. Especially in 1st and 2nd Maccabees. 1st and 2nd Maccabees. Catholic Bibles have those books in their Old Testament. Now, they're not actually part of the inspired Old Testament canon, but those were intertestamental works written like 1st century BC and toward the end of that century. And they really cover in great depth that intertestamental period, that 400 years, and it's very interesting reading too. I mean, it really is. So that would be just one of numerous that were written during that time, and there's just a whole bunch of Jewish writings during that time. But those two works really cover that period. Also, Josephus, you can read Josephus as he writes about that intertestamental period. Okay. All right, any other questions before we go back and put these books in their proper
place? Do the Catholics believe that the Maccabees are inspired?
Well, kind of depends on who you talk to. In like 1546, I believe it was, there was the Council of Trent, and the Catholic Church of the Council of Trent officially pronounced 1st and 2nd Maccabees and some others that are called the Old Testament Apocrypha. They pronounced them deuterocanonical, which meant secondarily canonical, sort of a secondary canonical status. Most Catholics would treat them as inspired, but they're not. I mean, they are not part of the inspired canon that Jesus and the Jews of the first century talked about as the scriptures. You can prove that historically. But they're very valuable writings just for historical information. Okay. All right. Now, let's just start putting these Old Testament books in their proper place. As far as these books that make up the Pentateuch, I think everybody recalls that. You've got the book of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and then Deuteronomy. And again, we tried to overview these books. Just kind of think now a little bit about what you recall about each of these books and their content. I think it's important that every Christian at least has just a basic idea of what the content is of each of these Old Testament books. Genesis. You recall we talked about how the first 11 chapters are talking about God being the creator and the God of early human history leading up to the time of Abraham. And then chapter 12 through the end of Genesis is specifically focusing in upon the history of whom? Abraham, who else? Well, but Isaac really is kind of minor, really. I mean, who's Jacob, and then a lot of material devoted to Joseph. Okay, so Abraham, sure, Isaac, but then Jacob, and then the 12 sons of Jacob, but especially Joseph. Okay, and if you were going to then tell somebody what the main purpose was for Genesis, why did God have Moses write Genesis? What purpose is it serving? How would you answer that?
To set up the exile.
Hmm? Well, but what do you mean?
How they got there.
All right, to explain to the people how it is that they are now being brought out of Egyptian bondage by this God and who He is, this God of their fathers. I mean, the whole thing is to explain that Yahweh, the creator of all things, is the God who revealed Himself to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Those patriarchs, the forefathers of this Israelite people. And so it's setting all of that up so that they will understand exactly who God is, and everything is about their relationship with this God, Yahweh, stems from that promise that God made to Abraham. I had a student the other day ask me, well, in this biblical passage where this prophet is talking, is the promise to Abraham in the background of what that prophet was talking about, the blessings that God was going to give? The student asked me, is the promise to Abraham underlying that? And my answer was, the promise to Abraham underlies everything that God promises in the Old Testament. I mean, we need to see how significant it is, okay? And that's what the book of Genesis is explaining. That the reason why Yahweh is having this special relationship with this particular group of people whom He's brought out of Egyptian bondage is because of the relationship He established with their forefather Abraham. And His promise that He was going to bless Abraham and give his seed this nation, or this land, make them a nation, bless those who would bless Abraham, curse those who would curse him and his people, and ultimately in Abraham bless all families. Whatever God meant by that one. Genesis doesn't explain that. But that's what the book of Genesis is all about. So often when you ask people, what's the book of Genesis about? Oh, it's to show that God made everything. Well, but that's just the introduction of the book. I mean, if all you think about when you think of Genesis, oh, well, God, that's how God created things, and it talks about that. I mean, that's not even the real purpose of it. It's talking about that Creator God is the God who established this relationship with the Israelite people. All right, the book of Exodus. Let's just go through this real, real quickly. The book of Exodus, what's it about? How God brought them out of Egypt and brought them where? Not to the promised land, no. Exodus just takes them to Mount Sinai. And at Mount Sinai, who do they meet there? God. He comes down to meet His people. Let them meet Him. Okay. And what does He give them? That law, that Mosaic covenant, this special covenant that He was giving with that nation of people to whom He made that Abrahamic promise. And this Mosaic covenant is going to be a covenant wherein Yahweh is going to dwell among His people in that sanctuary that will be in the midst of their territory once they get to the promised land. And that's why so much of the chapters in Exodus are talking about all the instructions about how you build Yahweh's sanctuary. Because that's the real point of it. I mean, again, you know, we call it Exodus. But the Exodus from Egypt is really just the introduction. I mean, that's just what gets them to Mount Sinai. What Exodus really is about is God revealing this covenant to them, giving this special covenant to them, where He's going to dwell with them in that tabernacle and hear all those sacrificial aspects of the Mosaic system. And they, among all the nations of the world, are going to have that special relationship with God and that special worship. That's just an amazing honor that He is giving them. And of course, at the end of Exodus, what do the people do? It wasn't real good. They reject the very covenant that they just promised to keep. And they violate God's commandments. They commit idolatry. They paganize Yahweh. Worship Yahweh in the form of a golden calf. And then the climax of the whole book of Exodus is Moses doing what? Well, Yeah, but then Moses doing what? Interceding and begging God, please forgive them, please restore that Mosaic covenant. And God ultimately says, yes, I will do that because of your intercession, Moses. And so they build the tabernacle. The Mosaic covenant will be a reality after all. Okay, that's what the book of Exodus is about. Okay, that's what we need to have in our minds. Okay, Leviticus. Leviticus is, again, written while the Israelites are still encamped at Mount Sinai. And it basically is talking about a whole bunch of laws concerning what? The worship, the sanctuary, the sacrifices, how the people can be holy by eating the proper food that the Mosaic Covenant was calling upon them to eat. Priesthood established, all those things that have to do with the priestly and sacrificial system. Okay? The book of Numbers. What's that about? The names of these books are not original, and a lot of times they'll confuse you as to what the real purpose is. So just, yeah, I mean, that's not even... The book of Numbers is recording the history of the people from going from where to where? From Mount Sinai to the Promised Land. From Mount Sinai to the eastern side of the Jordan River. Okay, ready to then cross over. Okay, and it was a trek that should have taken them a few weeks, tops. A few days, really. I mean, you could have made it in days. How long did it take him to get there? 40 years. That's the point of Numbers. It took him 40 years to reach a point that it should have taken him just days to reach. Because they wandered for 40 years in the wilderness instead of getting to their destination. And why did they wander for 40 years? Because they, again, were rejecting the covenant that God gave them, and they grumbled and they complained. And when they were ready to enter into the Promised Land, they sent spies. The spies came back and said, oh, we can't take it. There's no way we're going to get beat up. It's terrible. Let's forget it. And God says, I'm not taking you in there. I'll take your kids in there. I'm not taking you into the Promised Land. You will die in the wilderness, just like you were saying that your children would. So that's what the book of Numbers is about, okay? And of course, the climax of Numbers is who among that generation of the Exodus generation is included in the sinners? In the sinners, ironically, Moses and Aaron. See, even Moses and Aaron don't get to go in, which shows God is not going to be a respecter of persons. Shouldn't that have been a lesson for the Israelites throughout their history, that just because we're the seed of Abraham, that doesn't mean God is going to just cut us extra slack and just overlook our sin? You know, no, he even was willing to punish Moses and Aaron. So, I mean, this is what the book of Numbers is all about. Okay, then the book of Deuteronomy is really a little bit of a different book, or just from the others. It's three speeches given by whom? Moses. Remember he's talking about that? Three speeches given by Moses, his farewell address to the nation, basically. That second generation that's going to be going across the Jordan River and entering into the Promised Land. And he says, don't be like your fathers were, your parents. You follow that covenant and God will bless you when you enter into the Promised Land. Okay. All right. That's the Pentateuch. Okay? Just in a nutshell. Okay? All right. Questions, comments? All right. Any other Old Testament books that were written at a time that would be on this slide? Well, Job, you know what? I didn't even put that on here. We're not really sure when Job was written. I mean, but the period of time it would be covering would have been prior to this time, as far as when Job lived. But yeah, when that was written, that's another question. Aside from that, any other books here? Okay, no. Okay. Whoops. No, hang on. Sorry, I wasn't supposed to do that. Okay. All right. During the Judges era and then the United Monarchy period, okay, there are some historical books that we need to talk about. Joshua and Judges would have been written right around the United Monarchy period. Now, some of the material probably had been written down earlier. But again, don't just assume that since, okay, it's the book of Joshua, well, that means it was, you know, all written in its final form, you know, right there in the days of Joshua. Actually, Joshua and Judges, certainly Judges, probably written here at the beginning part of the United Monarchy period. What other Old Testament book would you associate with the time period of the Judges and probably written right around this time in the time of David? Little short book. Ruth. Sure. Ruth takes place, or the events it describes take place during the Judges era, but Ruth, along with Judges, written in that United Monarchy period during the reign of David. Okay, why is it? Why would? What's the connection between Ruth and David? Yeah, she, this Moabite woman who then becomes the in that lineage that ultimately then gives birth to King David, the head of that Davidic dynasty. Okay. Now, you got during the time of David and Solomon and the United Monarchy period, you've got several books of Old Testament poetry that we commonly call them, the Psalms. Now, I put a little arrow after that because are all the Psalms written during the time of David and Solomon? No, there's a lot of Psalms that were written throughout the further history of the nation, at least up to the time of the exile. But most of the Psalms are written by David. There's a couple written by Solomon. And so you kind of start with the Psalter in that time period. What other books would you put in that same time period? Proverbs, okay. And again, you would associate the book of Proverbs especially with which king? Solomon. But, as we talked about, there's a lot of material in Proverbs that really comes after the time of Solomon. So that's why I have that arrow there. What other books would you associate with the time of Solomon? All right, Ecclesiastes, if he's the author, and you know, you can make an argument that he's not, but it seems to me that he is the author. And then the Song of Solomon, okay, again, you kind of have questions about you know, the exact authorship and all that, but that seems to be what the text means, the Song of Songs, which is Solomon's, that is, Solomon wrote it. So, all right, these are books of Old Testament poetry and wisdom literature, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and the Song of Solomon, that you would associate during that period of time. Any questions, any comments about any of these books during that period of time? All right. The divided monarchy period. Here's where it gets a little hairy, doesn't it? Okay, here's where you need to be doing some writing, a lot of writing here. Most of the Old Testament books are written during this period of time. And yet this is the period of Old Testament history that most people are least familiar with. So, but not us, because we've had this class this quarter, right? Okay. Let's just talk about, first of all, what books of Old Testament history would give you the history of this period of the divine monarchy. All right, Samuel and Kings. Okay, we're not, Chronicles actually was written later, so we'll talk about that later. Now, we aren't exactly sure when Samuel was written. I kind of put it there, but you know, you could make an argument it was written a little bit earlier. You can make an argument it was written about the same time as Kings was. But we know Kings was written at the time of the Babylonian exile, because that's the event that it last records. And so you need to think about the books of Samuel and Kings covering this period. Samuel, the United Monarchy period, and then Kings, picking up with Solomon's reign and then talking about the divided monarchy period. And what did we say was the purpose, just based on the content, what's the purpose of Samuel? The purpose of the book of Samuel. Don't just say, well, to give the history of that. I mean, yeah, but what's it really trying to explain? That's really more the book of Kings. I mean, you could make the same point about Samuel, but really that's the case with Kings. But the book of Samuel, just on its content and what it focuses on, what's the primary issue that it's trying to explain? Something historical that had happened with a nation that needed to be explained. The establishment of the kingdom in the hands of whom? David. And to show that David, who wound up with the throne, did he usurp that throne? Did he steal it from Saul? Did he take his men and start a military coup and wrest it from his father-in-law? No. Now, that's what Saul claimed. But the book of Samuel is very obviously, when you read the whole book, it just jumps out at you that it's intended to show that God was behind the throne being taken away from Saul and given to David and his house, and that David did not militarily try to steal Saul's throne at all. It was all God's purpose, and David never raised a hand against Saul. Now that's an important point, because this great kingship of Israel, if it starts because the king who heads that nation's dynasty steals it from somebody else, That's not a very glorious kingdom, is it? Not if the God being served is this righteous God who would disdain that kind of behavior. But that's the charge that David had labeled against him by Saul all during those years. David was a criminal. He was a fugitive for years before he became king. And even years afterward, the nation was divided about how they were going to view David. So that's a major, major point, okay? Major, major purpose for Samuel. Okay, then the book of Kings that then really starts with Solomon and his reign and the securing of the throne in the hands of Solomon, and then takes it all the way through the end of the divided monarchy period leading up to the Assyrian exile of the northern kingdom and the Babylonian exile of the southern kingdom. Dwayne, what's the purpose of the book of Kings? The reason why the calamitous history happened was because they violated the Mosaic Covenant, and everything in their history happened exactly as God had said in the Mosaic Covenant it would happen if they violated that covenant. I mean, that's the purpose of Kings. It is so tied in with the book of Deuteronomy and what Moses had forewarned. And the book of Kings is just explaining our nation is now in exile. What happened? We're supposed to be the people of God. What happened to us? What happened to our nation? Well, you rejected the covenant throughout your history. That's what happened to you. And that's why you wound up in exile. Okay, so those are the books of Samuel and Kings. Don't look at that yet. Okay. Let's talk about the Old Testament prophets. Good night. Got 6 minutes to talk about these prophets. Okay, I'll preach a sermon on this. Old Testament prophets. When do the Old Testament prophets start having their oracles written down? When during this period of time? Okay. 8th century, mid-8th century B.C. That's when these prophets start having their oracles written down. So all those books of Old Testament prophecy that you have in your Old Testament Bibles, most of them are written during this period of time. Amos, remember Amos goes up to the northern kingdom to prophesy against Samaria and against the northern kingdom during the reign of Jeroboam the second. Okay. Hosea, prophet to the northern kingdom. Remember how God had Hosea to go marry a woman from the bad part of town? A woman of harlotry. And then ultimately, she bears him children, but the latter children are not Hosea's children. She's played the harlot. She's committed adultery. And what was the point of that event? What did God say that illustrated in regard to his people? Yeah, that there was a generation of Israelites here. Yahweh wasn't their father. Baal was their father. They're worshiping Baal, but they don't know Yahweh. And Yahweh's not their father. He didn't sire those people. I mean, that's the idea. All right, Jonah. You'd also put Jonah in that period of time. Okay. So Amos, Hosea, Jonah, prophets to the northern kingdom, right around the mid-8th century B.C. Okay. All right, who are the prophets down south? Same basic period of time, right around the time when the northern kingdom goes into exile. Who are the prophets down south at that time? Who? Well, we don't know really when. If I don't even have him on this chart, we don't really know exactly where Joel would come, because there's not a date given really. But who's the major prophet? Isaiah, sure, Isaiah. Okay, in your mind, connect Isaiah with this period of time. He's a prophet of Judah at the time when the Assyrians are the major power. They destroyed the northern kingdom in 721. And they're threatening the southern kingdom of Judah. Isaiah is the prophet at that time. Dwayne?
Yeah, Jonah was a prophet to the northern kingdom, but went to the Assyrians, didn't he?
Well, that's right. I mean, his main prophetic work was with the northern kingdom, but the book of Jonah is all about that event in his life where God had him to go speak to the people of Nineveh of Assyria. And of course, the connection with all that is Assyria is the major world power at this period of time. Okay, all right. Who's Isaiah's younger contemporary? Who is it? Nick? You just said it. You mumbled it. You didn't? Thought you mumbled Mike. Did you? Oh, you didn't. Well, I'm glad you didn't say anything. That would have been embarrassing if you... Sorry. Micah, younger contemporary of Isaiah. Just connect Micah with Isaiah. And just appreciate just the basic events that are going on. Assyria is the major threat. The northern kingdom just got sent into exile. And the southern kingdom, it ain't doing too good either. Yeah. I mean, that's basically what's going on when Isaiah and Micah are prophesying. Okay. A little bit after the time of Isaiah and Micah, who are some other prophets to the south? Some minor prophets just a few years after the time of Isaiah and Micah. Around 630, 615, yeah, okay. Zephaniah, okay. Little short oracle, but talking about God coming in judgment, and what's the phrase he and some of the other prophets use? When God comes in judgment, judges the sinners, and delivers his faithful people, that's the, what's the phrase? The day of the Lord. The day of Yahweh. The day of the Lord. Okay, judgment day. He brings judgment upon the sinners, but he will rescue the righteous. So Zephaniah's little oracle talking about that. Nahum is also written at this period of time. Now, Nahum is a prophet who gives this oracle against what foreign nation? Saying it's going to collapse real soon. Assyria. Specifically Nineveh, the capital city. So Nahum starts with an N. Think Nineveh starts with an N. Okay. Nahum speaking about the imminent fall of the nation of Assyria. And sure enough, 612 B.C., Nineveh falls to the Babylonians. Habakkuk. I'm sorry? No, all of these now are the southern prophets. Southern kingdom. Northern kingdom's over with. All right, so Habakkuk. All right. Habakkuk. Southern prophet during this time. What is the issue Habakkuk is so puzzled with? He's having a discussion with God about this. He doesn't understand. God is going to judge Judah using what people? The Chaldeans, which is another name for the Babylonians. And why is that so problematic for Habakkuk? Because they are worse than we are, Habakkuk says. And they were. But God's point is what? I'm going to use them to judge my people first, because my people should know better. But then he says, I am going to bring judgment upon the Babylonians. They will fall. They will pay for their sins. And the ultimate point of Habakkuk is, Habakkuk, you just put your trust in me. I'm going to handle it. The righteous man shall live by faith, Habakkuk is told. That's the passage Paul quotes in Romans. Okay, so the righteous man shall live by faith. Just put your faith in God. He'll take care of it. Okay? The time of the exile, prophets Jeremiah during the Babylonian exile, major prophet during that period of time. Who else is a prophet during the time of the exile? To the Babylonian exiles in Babylonia, who's the prophet? Ezekiel. And then who's in Babylon, the capital city, not prophesying to the Jews, but working as a governing official in the Babylonian court? Daniel. Okay? All right. That's that period of time. All right. Is that our first bell? I hope so. Ezra and Nehemiah. Okay, now this is more familiar because we just covered this. Haggai and Zechariah, when the temple is rebuilt by Zerubbabel, they encourage him to do that. And then Malachi, last prophetic book, and the last book of the Old Testament, Chronicles, that just reviews everything and talks about how God made these promises and now it's ready, or the time is ripe for God to bless us. Our punishment is over. Okay? That's the Old Testament books. Okay? How many of you feel like, boy, I've just got that? I can't wait now to teach this class, Marty, because I've got it. Okay, well, how many of you feel like, okay, but I've got a pretty fair idea. How about raise your hand, make me feel good? All right, very, very good. Appreciate all the hard work that everybody's put into this quarter. Okay, very good. Thank you, folks.